lost, at long, long last, Newcastle United are winners. The Geordie Nation has its hands on a trophy. Eddie Howe can walk on the River Tyne. All the lads and lasses there, all with smiling faces.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Yes, back after our break. We had a nice week off. Jan and I went to Portugal. Not together, we went in different parts of Portugal. And the weather was awful, wasn't it, Jan?
It was awful. It was a lovely place, but it was very, very wet.
Yeah.
It was wet at your end of Portugal as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely hammering down. But anyway, doesn't matter because I had a nice time away and now we're back. It's nice for us to have a little break, a week off, and come back all invigorated just in time for the international break, haven't we? We're not afraid of international breaks. Some people say, oh, God, no, not an international break. It always comes at the worst possible time, doesn't it?
Well, yes, they do. They do and they don't. I mean, I love them, but also I find them an inconvenience and they come at the worst possible time. For Crystal Palace, I guess it's quite good because they didn't play at the weekend for League Cup related reasons. And then, of course, then the international break. So they've got a nice long break before going into what is, for them, the defining game of the season, and that's the quarterfinal against Fulham. So actually, it's quite well timed, this international break. But in general, yeah, club fans, yeah, and international breaks. But, you know, Wembley is a sellout. There's Nations League going on. There's a lot going on. So it's a good international break. It's not like one of the ones in September or November where it is quite early on and you think, oh, we're just getting going. This one, I think, is quite a good one. I like the spring one.
Yeah, I mean, it's been about 4 months since we had any international football, so I'm quite happy with it. Jan's probably a bit more sniffy about it because like, he thinks all international football should be in June and July, don't you, Jan?
Yeah, I only like tournament international football. I really find it difficult to get any level of enthusiasm, which is probably coming across in my voice as I speak now. About the qualifiers. So, yeah, I suppose what's interesting out of this is who is going to be in charge of the England team. So that makes it a bit more interesting. And the fact that the first England game's on Friday probably means I will have a look in.
Yeah, of course, because you love watching a game at Wembley, don't you? Wembley, it's always such a great experience. I wonder if they've cleared it up from yesterday, because yesterday, of course, was the League Cup final. And Jan, you must have been all over it, because obviously people from your neck of the woods are very, very happy today. Not from your immediate neck of the woods, from where you used to come from, but, you know, just a little bit north of there. Where does the border of the Geordie Nation come?
The Geordie Nation? Graham, please, could you not use that term? You know, I find it quite triggering.
Is there a street in Washington where you think, right, okay, this is, you are now entering the Geordie Nation?
Yeah, there's a big side of a house. It's painted white and it's written in big black letters. You are now entering Free Northumbria.
They've repainted it to green and white now to match the colours of the nation of Saudi Arabia that made this great victory possible.
Yeah. It used to be at the Tyne, which is where County Durham would end. That was the limit of County Durham. So beyond the water is the Geordie Nation. Oh, do you know what? I was watching the match yesterday with friends and I only heard those words being uttered on the replay that I watched this morning. But I woke up quite early this morning and I thought, oh, I'll just stick on a podcast just to help me doze back off to sleep. One of our competitor podcasts were on and they mentioned the term Geordie Nation. and I actually opened my eyes just so I could roll them. The Geordie Nation. What a joke. On a serious point, as you mentioned, Graham, there's a lot of crossover between the two cities, and so I've got a lot of friends who support Newcastle, and they were very pleased yesterday. And it has been a 70-year wait for a proper trophy. So it was good to see my friends happy, but just not quite for the reason that they were.
Terry, I don't know what you thought about the coverage, because it was weird, because ITV were carrying Sky Sports coverage.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were having Peter Drury's commentary, Carragher and Neville chipping in, and they had Mark Chapman anchoring it. So you would have seen the same one as I did, but I was watching on ITV. Now, on Sky, obviously, that's normal, but on ITV, it was more like a two-hour advert for Sky, because throughout the whole show, Peter Drury was bumping other things that will be on Sky Sports for you to watch. I'm watching ITV, but I'm watching Sky Sports. This is weird, and I'm just hearing adverts of Sky Sports all the way along. Surely Ofcom must be thinking, this can't be right.
I'm astonished to hear stories of over-commercialisation in football. Astonished, I tell you.
The beautiful game's gone, isn't it?
It's gone, Graham. It's been gone for a while, I feel. It really has gone now, I feel. I don't think they'll get into trouble with Ofcom actually for that, because really all it is just like, it's a simulcast. I think it's absolutely fine. And I suspect ITV would have driven down the price of the sub-license for carrying that game. So a very small price to pay, I would suggest, for them. Fine. Want to do a bit of product placement, plug your other stuff. That's not a problem. You're paid TV. We're free to air. It's no problem. We live in different worlds. And we also then, they didn't have to pay to get their usual gang to do the coverage of this match. So actually, it seems rather sensible. I don't have any particularly strong views on the actual coverage of the game in between the halves, because I didn't watch the halftime coverage and I didn't stick around for the post-match coverage. I thought it would probably be nauseating.
Oh, yes.
I think I may have been right. As for the in-game coverage, Peter Drury is a wonderful wordsmith, but he is as over-poetic as modern football is over-commercialised. It was starting to grate after a while. I understand the significance of Newcastle United winning a major trophy for the first time since 1955, and I can understand how that this is a big thing. But, at the same time, when you contextualise it all with what they've had to do to get to where they are, I personally find that a little bit difficult. So I didn't really enjoy that aspect of it. And that's why I decided that it was probably best for me to not enjoy the rest of the coverage and put something else on instead, maybe a Bundesliga game on or something like that, assuming it's not been postponed. So I can't really say much about it, but I know apparently Mark Chapman sort of like said, oh, well, if you're not affected by these teams, then you're not human, or you're a Sunderland fan. I don't know whether that was the line, but I just think stuff like that's a little bit tone deaf, really. It would have been good to have had some kind of subtle or subliminal, sort of context to this sort of like, a lot's been done at that club. They've had to give up a lot of themselves to win this trophy. I think that people should be concerned, and I would have liked to have seen a little bit of that, while at the same time not necessarily raining on people's parade. Not easy, I appreciate, but not difficult either, within the skill sets of broadcasters.
Because I did watch some of the extra guff, and my god, it was guff. And yet it was overflowing with this means so much more for the starved people of Newcastle to actually win something after 70-odd years. Well, yeah, I mean, that's because they've been sad 70 years of being crap, basically. And even when they did have a good period, they never won anything because they just weren't that good enough, even when they had loads of really good players and spent loads and loads and loads of money on big players. So, team that hasn't won anything in ages wins something. It's a lovely story. And they beat Liverpool. They were heavy, heavy favourites to win the tie. But this is the League Cup. The League Cup probably goes to the underdog more often than the FA Cup. That's just vibes. That's just me vibes and there.
I'm not sure that holds up. But anyway, yeah, let's
It does when Arsenal are in it.
I mean, what is the difference between, I don't know, Newcastle? Are they saying that Newcastle fans are more deserving of breaking this long period of success than fans of other clubs? Is that the inference here? Is it that, like, the Geordies are just so mad about their football, they're madder than anyone else that they deserve it? Because that always feels a little bit unkind to, you know, there's people who turn up to their football clubs every week, home and away, and they will never see them win anything.
Yeah.
Apart from maybe a divisional playoff final.
Yeah.
If they're on a good season. Why are those people less? The inference seems to be that those people are less deserving. Or am I reading that wrong? Am I just being a little bit bitter here, guys, because it's Monday evening and I've got a bit of a cold?
Maybe. I don't know if maybe Jan might agree or disagree with this. But if you look at something like Forest, what Forest are doing right now, no one's really saying, oh, this is brilliant for the fans because they've been starved of success for so long. European champions of the late 70s, and now they're going to be back in the Champions League, and it's for the fans because their fans are so great. I would imagine there are probably Forest fans who are quite great, but are they any better or worse than the Newcastle fans? I mean, are they more or less deserving? Jan, what do you think?
I think you're right. I mean, you could say the same about Ipswich. You could say the same about Derby. Yeah. You could say the same about Leeds. I mean, the list goes on, doesn't it? There wasn't much thought gone into that. It was a good, easy story, you know, lovable Newcastle fans. Their barren period is over and they're all happy, and we just point the cameras at them and it's nice, easy content. You know, the neutrals will love it. Of course, the neutrals tuned in not to be bothered by the very important points that Terry raised, but the whole politics of the takeover. And obviously just, you know, they don't want to think about it's because it's entertainment, isn't it? And saying that's fine. So I suppose with that in my mind, I'm kind of like, well, I didn't watch the guff, so because I knew what it was going to be like.
Yeah.
And of course, it's unbearable if you're a Sunderland supporter just to watch them, you know.
Yeah, but the Sunderland fans are so deserving. They really do need Premier League football, don't they?
Because they're starved.
And they're amazing fans. And that club really needs to be in the top flight, don't they, Jan?
Absolutely. Now, that's the kind of guff I could get behind.
Well, you won't hear that guff here, listeners. No, we don't do that kind of guff. We do a whole different type of guff on here.
Can I just make a point about Liverpool?
Yes.
What happened to Liverpool yesterday? Because their performance yesterday reminded me of Newcastle's performance 2 years ago when they played Man United in the League Cup final. And because it just didn't turn up. I mean, Mo Salah, to be honest with you, I hardly heard his name mentioned. Liverpool just weren't there. And of course, that game followed their exit from the Champions League during the week as well. So coming up to Christmas, we were talking about them potentially winning everything. And they've had the two reverses I've just discussed and also an embarrassing exit at the hands of Plymouth as well. So are the wheels coming off Liverpool? I mean, it would be one hell of a collapse if they were to throw away the title. And I know one of my colleagues here would be very happy if they did. But I'm just wondering, because Liverpool won the League Cup last season under Klopp. And that was obviously his last trophy he was to win with Liverpool. I'm just wondering whether did that get to somebody? Did that get to Slot? It just seems like for them being in pole position coming up to Christmas, all they've got left is the league, which they're going to have to work hard not to win. But it seems like a bit of a fall from grace, don't we think?
Personally, I think the wheels could fall off them now and they are still counted to the title. Do you know what? I can't remember the last decent final Liverpool were in recently, especially League Cup final. They usually end up drawing 0-0 with Chelsea or winning it by the odd goal. And that works with FA Cup finals as well. They never really impressed that much. Even when they won the European Cup against Tottenham, they weren't that good. They managed to get an early penalty, a very, very cheap penalty against Tottenham. Tottenham were just happy to be there as well. Can you remember a decent cup final that Liverpool... They've won a hatful of silverware, but
Not that they've won. No, I mean, the first final against Real Madrid, that was decent, but that was,
yeah.
that was
because they... yeah.
It's everything else that was going on there. But now I would have to go back through Liverpool's finals and then recall them and try and remember whether or not they were decent games or not. But I think it's a fair point. Maybe, you know, they've not actually got the appetite for these cup finals, but because they are just generally speaking such a talented bunch.
Yeah.
And oftentimes their opposition are coming into the game with their own particular issues and neuroses, that is perhaps enough for them to see them over the line, so to speak. Whereas Newcastle in this game were very, very evidently up for it.
Yeah.
And strictly from a sporting point of view, it's a shame that Chiesa's goal of just taking the shine off of it, it would have been a pretty much immaculate performance for which they deserve a great deal of congratulations for showing up to the game. And it is a game they clearly wanted to win. It was a final they wanted to win. This is their season, really, isn't it? I suppose. I know there is the possibility, obviously, there's Champions League, but really what they want is glory. What they want is silverware, and that's what they've got. But to return to Liverpool, yeah, and I think Graham's right. I think that the wheels could fall off that car and they could still limp over the line at this point, such as the lead that they've got. But it will be disappointing if that happens, and it will raise questions for next season as to what that means for them if they do go on a run. But I guess the timing of the international break works quite nicely for Liverpool as well. At least they've got a break now where they can have a strong word with themselves and pull themselves together, you know, for what should hopefully be a decisive stretch down the season. But no question it's disappointing. It's a tricky one, a League Cup, I would imagine, for a club like Liverpool and a team like Liverpool after losing in the Champions League and being obviously very fatigued after that game, then to lose as well. And then are you psychologically, mentally prepared to go in to a game against a very, very good and highly motivated and clearly very well organised opposition? It's not ideal circumstances for Liverpool. But, you know, the manner with which they were kind of blown away does kind of tell you something.
Mm.
And we'll know what that means a little bit later in the weeks that follow. We'll have a better understanding about the context of this performance, you know, when we see how Liverpool fare in the weeks to come.
Yeah, I think the point that Jan made earlier about the fact about Newcastle not turning up the last time they were in the final, that must sit heavy with them. There's a lot of those players that were there 2 years ago still there now. And obviously they decided that this would not happen again. And I think against a decently motivated side, a team that has just gone out the way it had done in the Champions League, when everything was moving towards one of those famous nights at Anfield in the Champions League, and then to get turned over in your own patch by a PSG that isn't the superstar-laden PSG that we know, and actually a PSG side that looks really good. And looks like the best chance of them actually winning the Champions League ever, I think. They look a decent team this time around. Or did Liverpool just make them look good? I would think that Liverpool fans should be worried by that display, because basically Liverpool, that's it for the rest of their season. They are coasting to the title. They don't have to put any effort into winning the title. They could have put everything into that performance and didn't. That would be concerning if I was a Liverpool fan, especially if no Trent and Mo Salah didn't turn up for the game, wasn't on it. If those two aren't there next season, along with Virgil van Dijk, which we still haven't heard anything about what they're going to do, if they're trying to replace those three players, or that's the sort of performance you get when you don't have them on their game, they're not going to be retaining their title, are they?
No. To replace some of the players that you just talked about would cost a lot of money.
Mm.
And as well as that, those players are going to need to bed in. And so, yeah. It's going to be a tough one for them if that happens.
Yeah.
That would be huge for them, for those players to depart Liverpool. They're such a part of the success under Klopp. It would kind of be ripping the heart out of the team, really, wouldn't it?
Totally. Anyway, let's go back onto what we were talking about earlier and the international break and England's World Cup qualifiers. Start off nice and easy with two home ties against Latvia and Albania. Albania, tricky side, but Latvia should be a bit more straightforward. But importantly, nice home ties, Terry. And Thomas Tuchel, his first England squad was announced on Friday. All very ordinary, isn't it, so far? Keeping it nice and quiet. What do you think of the squad when it was announced?
Well, I can't say that I was blown away with any kind of feelings of surprise. the headline at the time that it was announced was Jordan Henderson's recall. And I think that there were probably a few people that thought that maybe Hendo was finished for England, but that's not the case. And it's interesting, I would say, to see him back in. I wouldn't necessarily say it was good to see him back in. It's interesting to see him back in. But it does, to me, look like a fairly standard selection. If I can allow myself to be parochial for a moment, I was a little bit disappointed that Adam Wharton wasn't selected. Thomas Tuchel has spent a couple of recent games at Selhurst Park and has seen Adam Wharton play. But the lad is young and also is not long back from injury and a fairly lengthy injury. So maybe that's in his thinking. But some of the passes that Wharton has been making now, he seems to be back to the best that he was at this time last year. So that's a bit of a shame. But beyond that, again, admittedly quite parochial view, I guess also Rashford as well, I suppose. But that is not that much of a surprise because, unsurprisingly, now he's no longer a Manchester United player. He's playing quite well. And a good Marcus Rashford, as a rule, tends to get picked for England. That's just how it is, isn't it, really?
Yep. Yeah, indeed. Well, I was pleasantly surprised to see Miles Lewis-Skelly in the England squad. Jan, you're nodding your head, even though you think he's a dirty cheat.
I know he's a dirty cheat, but he's also an incredibly good player. He's a very, very gifted young man. And that's great to see. I mean, because I think he's represented England at nearly every level save the under-21s, which he's going to skip now to go to the full national side. So I really like it when young players get to represent themselves at the highest possible level. I hate it when they're left on the bench or they're left in the reserves. When you've got a talent like that, you should play them. Arsenal are playing them. And I think that's quite a bold move by Tuchel. I think it's the right one.
Carl Walker back in the England squad. That's another statement. You've got Carl Walker and Jordan Henderson in this squad. And you think, well, okay, Tuchel has decided, look, I'm not going to make things too surprising here, okay? Wait till we're on the pitch before we start making surprises, yeah? Terry, he said he's going to play a pressing game, going to play more like a club style. How do you think that's going to work out?
Yeah, and Tuchel is a massive Premier League fanboy, by all accounts.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously a former Premier League coach as well, but a massive Premier League fanboy. Absolutely loves the Premier League and loves English players. And I think he wants to, you know, from what he was saying, he wants England to play like a Premier League side. And he sees no reason why that should not happen. Now, there are, I suspect, probably possible reasons why that shouldn't happen. One of them, of course, is just the sheer toll that it takes on professional players to play that game. And the hard work that has to go in and practice to make it work. And this is, generally speaking, why you tend to find international football is different in character. There's more of an emphasis on rigid banks of four or low blocks or mid blocks, not so much pressing or counter pressing, because it's hard to coordinate in a relatively short space of time. And it's difficult for particularly for players after a long season, say in the summer, to play in that way. It's March and we'll see whether or not Thomas Tuchel does see that through. He's not got a great deal of time and he's got two games to come up. And against, moderately, well, for a team of England's calibre, these are games that you would expect them to win. And we're not just saying that because we're nutty England fans, but because the rankings and the recent positions of this team doesn't lie. So we'll see whether or not this is what happens. If he makes that stick and it works, it could actually be a bit of a game changer, not just for England, but also for international football, because asking players to do that is quite a big deal. But if it works, then there's a very good chance that England will win the World Cup, because it is a very, very effective way of winning football matches. And if you're the only team in the tournament that's doing it, then it gives you an extremely good advantage. That, I think, is probably more interesting than the lineup, and we will see just whether or not it turns out to be a calamity or not.
Yeah, and obviously there's no other football going on this weekend, so journalists will have to have something to write about. Does Tuchel have to win both of these games by at least 3 goals, or can he get away with just nicking wins here?
That's an interesting one. I think he'll probably get away with just nicking wins for the first few games. But I think, and we talked about it when he was appointed, that the press are going to be out to get Thomas Tuchel, like they are with most England managers. But of course, Thomas Tuchel is from Germany and our press are xenophobic and they don't like him because they still think it's only a few years since World War II ended and that Thomas Tuchel somehow had something to do with that, which he didn't. He's already on the back foot, I think, with the press, so he's going to have to entertain them. But I think he'll be all right as long as he's bringing in the wins. I think the real focus will come should he manage to get England to qualify for the World Cup. If they're not ripping up trees from the second the tournament starts, I think that's when the pressure will really show. We saw the kind of pressure that was on Southgate during the last tournament, and you know, because England weren't playing flair play and they weren't destroying everybody. But that's not necessarily always how you win tournaments. So anyway, the point being that it's going to be tough for him. I think he's crazy taking the job. He must, well, he clearly believes in himself. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, obviously we all want him to do well. And it's just a shame that he's going to have to put up with the press. He's going to have to put up with the Boo Boys singing their awful songs about Germany's history. So I hope that we can stick it to both of those groups that he does really, really well.
An interesting dynamic in terms, particularly in the way that Tuchel will be portrayed in the media and perhaps more broadly, is that Tuchel, I think, is a coach's coach. He's got a huge amount of respect as a coach amongst other coaches, but also amongst serious football people. And I think that the serious football people amongst the England press corps might be careful about their own reputations by laying into Tuchel too much on the basis that he's German. There are some nutty English journalists, you know, and they emerged in the wake of Tuchel's appointment and were largely laughed at, it should be said, for what was very jingoistic, very sort of anti-German sentiment that I suspect is actually not shared by the vast majority of the England population, albeit a disproportionate number of England fans who travel to games are quite anti-German. But I think that criticism will have to be tempered to a certain degree from the journalists because they'll want to maintain good relationships with Tuchel because he'll be back in the game after this because he's a relatively young coach and he's a good coach and he'll be working again, probably for a big club, probably in the Premier League. And so you need to keep an eye on the future and think about relationship management. There's an argument to say that Gareth Southgate was a great for what he was doing, but not a great coach, not necessarily destined to go to another big club afterwards. Not even Manchester United were foolish, frankly, enough to hire him. Roy Hodgson, the same. You know, I think this will be different. So I think there's that to consider. But I also feel that this is a massive moment for England, because if Thomas Tuchel can make this work for England, then there's a huge amount of symbolism going on here that I think, you know, will reach beyond just winning football matches and winning the World Cup. I think it will say something about ourselves. So for those of us who think about that, I think we all want Thomas Tuchel to do well because it will upset the right people, but also because I think I would be pleased to see it. I would obviously be pleased to see it happen, but I'd be particularly pleased to see if it was actually a German coach who was able to bring it home. That would be lovely.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this weekend's fixtures. I think it's actually going to be a chance to look at England. It's been so long. I mean, all right, yes, we did have a bit of Casball in the middle there, but really, it's been so long since we've had a proper full-time coach in there that wasn't Gareth Southgate. It's just going to be weird seeing a completely new version of England, haven't we? I think we're going to win. I think we're going to steamroll this group. I think we're going to go off to the World Cup and going to win it.
Yeah. Well, I've got to say, I don't think that's a controversial take at all. I think England should expect to comfortably qualify. But yes, the performances is going to be key. What are the performances like? But in a very, very real way, we all understand how this works. Just get the W's, worry about the performances after we've got the W's. So yes, just crack on, England. It's March. Win and, you know, set things up beautifully.
Yeah, and it's rare to get a manager who's won stuff while in England, isn't it? We don't get many of those taking the England job, do we?
You know, it's going to be really interesting to see what he can do, because there's no doubt he's got the pedigree. It's just whether, you know, there's a lot of moving a lot of moving parts in this, isn't there? And whether he can get a disparate group of players to come together like they did under Southgate. And it's one of the things he talked about, actually. I read an interview with him and he talked about wanting to create a brotherhood and picking players not just because of their talent and quality, but also what they can bring to the group, which is might be why you've got people like Jordan Henderson coming into it.
Yeah.
And Dan Byrne as well, who, as we saw yesterday, is a fine player. But the Henderson thing, I just one point on that. I can understand why people kind of raise an eyebrow at that, but he's not playing in a rubbish league anymore. He's playing every week for Ajax and they're top of the league. So I suggest he's probably earned his place there for all of the reasons that Tuchel said, their talent, quality, and also what he can bring to the group. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting.
It is. Now, listeners, you're not going to read about those matches in the box set this weekend because there is no box set this weekend because we have a break from that. What? I hear you say you've just had a week off of the podcast and now you're having a week off of the box set? Yes. Yes, that's how we work. That's how we do it. Yeah, we don't do box sets on international breaks. Not because we can't be bothered to fish around and find seven fantastic games for you to watch, but largely it is. Yeah, there's no box set, which means, of course, I will struggle to see this episode out. Because I've been doing this for years, and every week I do it, and I just talk about the seven games that you want to be watching from Friday to Sunday. And also about how to go to swlpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and subscribe. But I don't have that. I don't have that. So I'm sort of caught in the headlights. So this week, as a special, we've got Terry's Crazy World of the Bundesliga. Terry, what craziness has happened in the Bundesliga this weekend?
Welcome to the Crazy Bundesliga Corner. This week on Sunday, there was a game between Bochum and Eintracht Frankfurt, and that match was delayed by nearly 1 hour, 50 minutes it was, because as is characteristic matches, the away fans, the ultra group of the away fans, they put their flags up on the fences, the surrounding fences in front of their enclosure. But unfortunately, on this occasion, they covered up two fire gates, sort of like these escape gates. We don't have these in England, but in Germany they do. They still have fences that stop fans from going onto the pitch, but they have these gates. The banners were obscuring these gates and blocking them off. And the fire services, the emergency services, refused to sign off the game until they were taken down because they said that they were obscuring them and that was a potential safety hazard and that was the end of it. And I mean, I suspect in Germany, like in England, we revere our emergency services. And if they say that's not right, then you say, well, yep, you listen to the experts and do what you're told. Unless, of course, you're an Eintracht Frankfurt ultra group, in which case you don't. You stand there arguing with them for half an hour as to why they shouldn't be doing this. Eventually, what happened was that they were persuaded. When I say persuaded, I think they were basically given an ultimatum and said, look, if you don't do this, then this game's going to be called off. The players at one point were out on the pitch ready to play. And the referee just said, look, all right, fine, there's clearly an impasse here. So he took him off and there was a great deal of to-ing and fro-ing. And at some point, the Eintracht Frankfurt CEO had to go out there and have a word with them and try to persuade these guys to do what I think for many people would seem to be a very sensible thing. And at the same time, a not unreasonable request.
Well, it sounds like whatever Germany is for elfin safety gone mad to me.
That's probably what the ultras were arguing.
Yeah.
The ultras were probably arguing that it's elfin safety gone mad.
It's just the crazy world of German football, isn't it, Jan?
It certainly is. Take your flags down, lads. Don't be silly. is this for the same reason that European fans tend to be a bit more accepting of fireworks?
Yeah.
Because they didn't have an entire 1970s and 1980s full of public information films telling you how bad they are. So is it? Do you think it's linked to that kind of thing?
Well, I suspect the subtext to all of this is that there's been a range of different measures introduced by clubs and by security services that have made life a little bit more difficult for ultras and not allowed them to express themselves in the way that they would like. I think there's a feeling that there is that the football establishment doesn't like the culture of the ultra movement and is working against them. And it's possible that they may well have seen this as the latest move in that this is unnecessary, that those banners weren't doing any harm and everybody knew where the gates were, as I suspect probably what they would be saying were they here to defend themselves. I've got some sympathy for that sentiment because I don't believe it's paranoia. I think that over the years there's been an increase on these measures that have been working against the ultras. And I think also there's a, in the media, in the mainstream media there, there's a tendency to sort of try as much as possible. And we get this in this country, to not so much demonize the ultras, but certainly to, you know, regard them with a degree of suspicion. They are and can be a law unto themselves. And they can be an absolute pain in the ass when they want to be. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're not entitled to express themselves and to support the club in the way that they do, as long as, you know, everyone's consenting and as long as no one gets hurt. And I guess that it feels like here that this may have been maybe a step too far. Now, unfortunately, I've not had the opportunity to see what the ultras' reaction has been. I have no doubt that there has been a reaction to it, because I would imagine that they would have taken to Twitter to defend themselves and their position. So I'm a little bit careful. But yeah, I would suggest to you that if, for example, a member of the fire services was to come up to you and say, look, I know it sounds silly, but that is not safe. That needs to be uncovered so that people know exactly where that fire gate is. So if there's a crush or if there's an emergency, that, you know, we can easily open it out without there being any hindrance or anything like that. So, but I don't know if that's what happened. And probably knowing Germany, that's probably not what happened. They probably just like stood there and said, you need to move that. And then they would have gone, no. I said, well, you need to move that. And there would have been 20 minutes of that. One German saying, move that. The other German going, nein. And then finally, probably someone says to them, well, why do I need to move this? Said, because it's unsafe. Oh, fine. Why didn't you say so before, you twat? And then done it. And so all of these things are possible. So I'm reluctant to judge too harshly what's happened. But there was, you know, there was quite a lot of heated exchange between the two. You'd like to think the meaning was made clear to these guys. But passions run high in moments like this. Eintracht won the game, by the way, 2-1, I think it was.
Well, there you go, listeners. That was in place of my weekend box set bumper, which of course means that that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Please make your way safely to the exits.
Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
What exits? I can't see them.
They're right,
you've got ways. You've got your shit up everywhere and I can't see where they are.
Well, I'm not moving them.
Move them.
Nah.
Move them.
Nah.
Move them.
Nah.
Move them.
Nah.
Terry, for God's sake, move them.
All right.